Now, we can explore the deep with robots, manned submarines, and we can even use maths to help us find certain things. But why? Well, apart from salvaging things we've lost, like gold, there is also an entire hidden world with new creatures and rare chemistries waiting to be understood. In fact, the bottom of the ocean is of interest to many mining companies, as it's rich in rare earth elements. But should we mine the deep? Joining us is Dr. John Copley from the University of Southampton. First up, John, what's down there of interest? Why do we want it so much?
It's the metals that we need for our everyday lives. So modern technology needs a lot of things like copper. Your family car's got about 30 kilograms of copper in it, but a hybrid car that emits less CO2 needs about 70 kilograms of copper. And then there are these metals called rare earth elements that we need in you know, high technology sort of devices. So things like touch screens use something called indium. There's neodymium, which we use to make really efficient magnets that we need for things like wind turbines. So there's an increasing demand for these metals for our everyday lives. And there are sources of those metals on the ocean floor. So that's why people are starting to get interested in trying to see if we can mine what's down there. And there are really three types of mineral deposit on the ocean floor. There's hot vents where mineral spires grow that are very rich in copper. Then there are manganese nodules. They're sort of new potato-sized little nodules on the ocean floor. They've got a lot of rare earth elements in them. And then there are crusts that form around the edge of undersea mountains called seamounts. And again, they're potentially very rich in rare earth elements.
You paint a beautiful picture of all these things growing on the sea floor, but how would you get them? Would you drill them? Would you dredge them?
Well, one of the attractions of deep sea mining is, unlike mining on land where you have to burrow, tunnel down through a lot of rock to get to the things you're interested in mining, these are sitting on the ocean floor. So if you can get down through the water, then potentially you can scoop those resources up. And of course, we have the technology, as we've been hearing about in this program, to operate in deep water. And a lot of it's been developed for offshore oil and gas, you know, for the sort of remotely operated vehicles that people use to do things on the ocean floor. You can adapt and develop that kind of technology potentially into mining machines for the deep.
I know it was talked originally about in the 60s, and now you say it's feasible, but is it economically viable?
It always sits on a bit of a knife edge. You know, supply and demand is there's also some complex economics involved. But back in the 60s, there wasn't the demand for the rare earth elements that we have with modern technology today. So that is changing things. Now, although they're called rare earth elements, they're not actually necessarily that rare. It's just that some countries control about 90% of the deposits known on land. So governments are really interested in long-term sort of security of supply, trying to ensure that we don't get caught in any monopolies in the future, and therefore interested in exploring new sources.
Okay, I see. Presumably, though, this is the similar problem at the bottom of the ocean. Who owns that bit of land?
Yeah, although who owns what at the bottom of the ocean has actually already been decided at the United Nations through something called the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea. And that means that if you have a coastline, you get 200 nautical miles, which is about 370 kilometres of ocean stretching out from your coastline, unless you bump into someone else's claim, in which case you split it down the middle. And then beyond that, a lot of the ocean is international waters. And the United Nations has created an organization called the International Seabed Authority to administer deep sea mining in international waters.
Presumably, though, with all human activities, particularly mining, there's got to be some sort of ecological impact.
Absolutely. And the real challenge in the deep ocean is we don't understand very much about the patterns of life down there, how things are going to respond to deep sea mining. And each of those types of mineral resources that I described has got different kinds of marine life associated with it, and they're going to respond in different ways. And indeed, they're different species in different regions of the oceans. So we have to do an awful lot more exploration and investigation before we can really confidently predict what the impacts of deep sea mining are going to be. So there's a real challenge for us there. I mean, in 2011, I surveyed a set of deep sea vents in the Southwest Indian Ocean, in a region where China had already been granted a license in international waters by the United Nations to explore for mineral resources, but we had no idea what was living at the deep sea vents in that region. We found, so far, at least six new animal species, most of which are not yet known anywhere else in the world other than the site where we were studying. So it's that kind of thing. It's exploitation potentially racing ahead of the exploration we need to understand what the impacts are going to be.
Just to play devil's advocate here, As the old proverb goes, what we don't know can't harm us. So does it really matter if we're causing these creatures to go extinct?
Well, in the Southwest Indian Ocean, one of the species that we found living at the hot vents there is a wonderful animal called the scaly-foot snail, and it has metal plates on its fleshy foot, unlike any other snail that we know of so far in nature. And the structure of its shell is very good at resisting mechanical damage, and material scientists are learning from that to design, you know, better body armor, better crash helmets, better pipeline protection, scratch-resistant paint. So, you know, if we lose biodiversity, we lose the opportunity to learn from the ingenuity of nature. But more fundamentally than that, if you look at the history of our species, we've often rushed to exploit a resource just because we can, and only later realized the impacts we're having and said, oh, hang on a minute, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. So deep sea mining really fundamentally offers us an opportunity to show whether we've grown up as a species. Are we still really an adolescent species that just does things because it can? Or can we once show that we've developed the wisdom to pause and decide, you know, whether we should go ahead and do something rather than just rush in and do it because we can?
It's definitely food for thought. Many thanks, John Copley.